The Memoirs of Charles James Yellowplush, sometime footman in many genteel families. Chapter 4, My Novel. I was now footman in service to one of the most distinguished and well-regarded aristocrats in the land, the Duke of Diddlesex. My duties included serving at the legendarily lavish dinners given by the Duke at Diddlesex Castle. These glittering gatherings were attended by all the most eminent in the kingdom. Bishops, lawyers, literary gentlemen, politicians, in short, all those who enjoyed a splendid meal at somebody else's expense. Nor did the Duke forget the needy who lived on the estate. The scraps were always thrown to them the next day, those which hadn't been thrown to the hounds, of course.
Well, that was it. Wellington turned to me with a grin on his face and said, Napoleon Bonaparte be damned. Just give this dog a bony.
The Duke was an amiable old cove who had a fund of amusing stories he liked to tell. Unfortunately, it wasn't a very large fund, and so most of the guests knew them by heart.
Give a dog a bony, eh? I shall never forget it.
The Duchess was an amiable lady of middle years, though perhaps over-acquainted with the contents of her dressing table.
Charles?
Yes, Your Grace.
Would you be kind enough to replenish my glass?
With pleasure, Your Grace.
Thank you, Charles. You pour so well.
The Duchess sometimes had a greater interest in the calves of a young, upstanding footman like myself than was seemly in a woman of her years. But her admiration is perhaps understandable because, though I say it myself, my calves were very fine and much admired.
Oh, I say, how too funny!
Their eldest son and heir, the Marquis of Doncaster, was a high-spirited young man in his 30s who loved hunting and drinking. Unlike many other aristocratic gentlemen I have encountered, he never cheated at cards. I'd like to say this was because he was a man of principle, but the truth is that he did not have the intelligence.
You know, I don't think I've laughed so much since the last time I laughed this much.
The Duke and Duchess also had a string of not very attractive daughters, all as yet unmarried. As aristocrats go, they were harmless enough. The Duke and Duchess had perhaps only one serious failing. They seemed blind to my obvious suitability for the post of head footman, the then current incumbent being a fat, pompous fool. But I think I should proceed with my tale.
Look, Charles, look what I found.
I should perhaps reveal that I was engaging in a dalliance with one of the chambermaids at Diddlesex Castle. Her name was Mary Ann, as chambermaids are often called.
See here, it's the latest work by Mr. Modicum.
Mary Ann was a dear, sweet girl of a rather over-romantic disposition.
I can't wait to read it.
So, what's this one called, Mary Ann?
Lords and Liveries by Augustus Modicum, author of Dukes and Dejeuners, Hearts and Diamonds, Marchionesses and Milliners. Do you want to hear some of it?
Oh, of course.
Chapter 1.
Mary Ann was educated above her station and so was a more than passable reader. She also approved of my aspirations to be head footman and helped me with my writing no end.
Are you paying attention, Charles?
Oh, of course I am, yeah. Lords and Liveries, let it be.
Chapter 1. Corbleu! What a lovely creature that was in the Fitzbattleaxe box tonight, said one of a group of young dandies who were leaning over the velvet-cushioned balconies of the Coventry Club, smoking their full-flavoured cubas from Hudson's after the opera.
Yeah, he's been paid to say that, you know.
Who's been paid, Charles?
Oh, Mr. Modicum. Mr. Hudson will have tipped him a handsome sum to mention his cigars near the start of his new book.
Oh, Charles, you're such a cynic.
Yeah, it's working for the aristocracy that does it. I'm sorry, I interrupted, Mary Ann.
Well, don't do it again. Everybody stared at such an exclamation from the lips of the young Earl of Badenoch, who was never heard to admire anything except the bouquet of a flask of Medoc of Carbonell's best quality.
Carbonell's paid him too.
Or a goot of Maraskin from the cellars of Briggs and Hobson.
So of Briggs and Hobson.
Oh, Charles, be quiet. Alliered de Pentonville, 14th Earl of Bagnage, Viscount Paon of Islington, Baron Pancras, King's Cross and a baronet, was, like too many of our men of Ton, utterly blasé.
Well, I think you get the general idea. What occurred to me was that although these aristocratic characters of Mr. Modicum's were often a bit bored with life and their amorous adventures were somewhat complicated and unhappy, the reader couldn't but take away the impression that the aristocracy were a fine body of handsome, cultured, witty people, whereas my view of them is somewhat less rosy. Perhaps that comes of not being properly appreciated by them. Still, who was I to take away from Marianne's pleasure? And then came the day.
The court of the sovereign, Marianne, and in the salons of the beau monde, was such as has seldom been created by the appearance of any other beauty.
Marianne.
The men.
Marianne, I've something to tell you.
Can't you wait, Charles? The men were raving with love. And
I think you'll be excited by this.
Oh, very well. What is it?
I've had sight of the guest list for next weekend. And guess who's on it?
His Gracious Majesty the King.
Well, you affect indifference, Marianne, but I know you will think differently when I tell you Augustus Modicum.
Augustus Modicum is coming here?
This very weekend.
Oh, Charles, how thrilling.
Oh, any event that could earn me kisses like that was clearly not to be sniffed at. The next weekend, the guests arrived in their usual numbers. Mr. Augustus Modicum, a solitary and slightly anxious gentleman, was not difficult to distinguish.
May I be of assistance, sir?
Thank you. My servant seems to have disappeared. Perhaps you could help me with my luggage.
With pleasure, sir. Particularly for you, Mr. Modicum.
You recognise me?
Indeed, sir. If you would be so gracious as to stoop so low, I know somebody who would appreciate it very much if you appended your signature to a copy of Lords and Liveries.
Oh, you seem a very literary fellow, James. Or are you a Charles?
I'm a Charles, sir. Now, may I take your luggage?
Thank you. My goodness, you're a very strong young man.
Mr. Modicum, in my opinion, was the sort of gentleman who takes as much interest in the fine calves of an upstanding young footman as the Duchess of Diddlesex herself. Once he settled in, it was clear that Mr. Modicum knew how to behave in the aristocratic society which he had so flatteringly depicted in his many literary effusions. In fact, he might have been said to be something of a social success.
Damn it, Modicum. I can't tell you how glad I am to have you here. Some of you literary fellows haven't the least idea how to conduct yourselves in polite society. But you, well, you do the aristocracy of good old England proud.
Oh, you overwhelm me with your kindness, Your Grace.
No, you deserve it.
My dear Mr. Modicum, there is something I've been meaning to ask you.
Whatever you wish, Your Grace.
Well, I have always fancied that in the beautiful and fascinating Lady Amanda Portcullis in Dukes and Dejeuner, you may have perhaps taken a hint from my own character.
I will not deny it, Your Grace. You're Modicum the writer, aren't you? I think I read one of your books once. I didn't get to the end, but got a damn sight further than I usually do in reading a book. Let me see. What was it called? Something about peers.
Peers and pastry cooks.
That's the one! Damn clever of you to remember what it was called.
However, a certain sort of nemesis awaited Mr. Modicum at the banquet. Being a literary gentleman, he was, of course, very partial to drink. And His Grace, the Duke, is always remarkably liberal in the dispensation of wine to his guests.
Yes, thank you. That's extraordinarily kind. Charles or James?
Charles, sir.
Oh, yes, of course. You know, Charles, I feel quite overwhelmed by all this. To think that I am sitting here at the table of the Duke of Diddlesex. I, Augustus Modicum, a humble scribe. When I think about it,
Unfortunately, at this moment, Mr. Modicum slid from his chair onto the floor, accompanied by a certain quantity of one of the Duke's more exclusive dinner services. Upon instructions from His Grace, I discreetly raised Mr. Modicum from the floor and supported him from the dining room up the stairs to his bedchamber.
Oh, I feel giddy.
right, sir. We're nearly there.
Oh, I made a complete fool of myself, Charles. You're very kind to take care of me.
I wouldn't worry, sir. You're not the first gentleman to slide off his seat at the Duke's table, and I don't expect you'll be the last.
Such a powerfully built young man.
Right. Here's your bedchamber, sir. There you are, sir. Now you'll feel much better if you lie down.
Can I confide something to you, Charles?
If you wish, sir.
I hate them. I hate them all. Every single one of those confounded aristocrats. They're stupid. They're dull. They spend money like water. They indulge in sexual dalliance like rabbits. And what for? What's the point of them?
Now, sir, with due respect, these seem to be rather radical, not to say revolutionary statements.
I don't care.
Please.
Oh, sorry. Shall I tell you something else, Charles? You know what I'd really like to do? I'd like to write a novel which showed them up for what they really are. Of course I won't. I'm too scared. But the first man who does will make a fortune. An absolute fortune.
It was as if someone had ignited a candle within my brain. The next morning, after the guests had departed, I could not wait for a spare moment to talk to Marianne.
Marianne, I have something for you.
For me?
Here, look inside.
To Marianne from Augustus Modicum. Oh, Charles, thank you.
Oh. Fact is, I had a very interesting conversation with Mr. Modicum, and he said something which had a great impact upon me.
Some philosophical words of wisdom.
No, not quite. Marianne, you know more of grammar and spelling than I ever will. Will you help me?
Help you do what, Charles?
Write a novel.
Write a novel? But servants don't write novels.
Well, this one intends to.
But what will it be about?
What I know about.
What do you know about, Charles?
Masters and servants. It was morning at Fuddlesex Towers. The Duke was, as was his wont when he got up, in a foul temper and swearing.
When he got up in a foul like temper and swearing like a trooper. The Duchess was a lady of advanced ears. I think that should be years, Charles.
Oh, of course. Pray, make a mark there, Marianne, to remind you.
The Duchess was a lady of advanced years who spent most of her time longing on a sofa. Longing?
Yeah, I meant lounging. Isn't that how you spell it? Make another mark.
Lounging on a sofa. The only occasion on which her interest was aroused was when a young footman went by and she caught a glimpse of his shapely calves and manly thighs. Oh, Charles, you can't say that.
Well, is there a grammatical error then?
No, but...
No, well, why can't I say it?
Because it's not respectful. You're making your Duchess sound just like our mistress.
So? You know it's true.
Well, yes, of course, but that's not how Duchesses are supposed to behave.
I think that is my point, Marianne. At night, in the gaming dens of London, debauched young men gathered to throw away fortunes on the throw of a card, and other debaucheries of a dark kind not to be described in a polite work of fiction also took place.
I laboured in my few leisure hours for a number of months at my novel, which I entitled Aristocrats Behaving Badly. I had no idea what hard work it would be, but I always bore in mind the words of Mr. Modicum. I was writing a novel to show them as they really are.
And so dusk fell on the debauched denizens of Fuddlesex Towers, and our tale is over. Finish.
Finis.
Well, that's not an English word.
No, but it is more genteel. Well, what do you think?
Oh, Charles, it's wonderful. But...
But?
It can never be published. Won't some readers recognise the Duke and Duchess as... Well, as our Duke and Duchess?
Indeed. I've written what I believe is known as a roman à clef. That is, there's a key to who everybody is in real life. Such devices are very popular, or so I've heard.
So you're determined to go ahead?
As soon as my monthly day off comes round, I'm off to London to see a publisher, Mr. Scavenger. He who publishes the works of Mr. Modicum. Carrying my manuscript wrapped discreetly in stout brown paper, I arrived in the streets of London to visit the offices of Mr. Scavenger. Inspired by the lordly titles of his many publications, I had imagined him to be lodged in a fine mansion somewhere in the city. Instead, he occupied a cramped and sordid office in the squalor of Soho.
So you've brought me a manuscript, have you? More paper to gather dust in this confounded prison of a room.
It's very good of you to see me, Mr. Scavenger.
Only because you walked in and wouldn't take no for an answer. What is it about authors that makes them believe they have the right to bombard publishers with their damned writings? Take a look around you, Mr...
Just for now, I wish to remain anonymous.
Well, Mr. Anonymous, take a look around and what do you see?
A great deal of paper, sir.
Gathering a great deal of dust. Here I have interminable epics written by lady poetesses in verse that is not merely blank but non-existent. I have tragedies so interminably long that you lose the will to live simply trying to read them to the end. I have...
Yeah, but you also publish novels.
Well, yes, and some of them even make money. But look again. Here are historical novels stuffed to bursting with meaningless fustian. Here are gothic novels which wouldn't frighten a baby mouse. And comic novels which are so unfunny you want to go and slit your wrists. Here...
But you also publish novels of high society.
Yes, and here I have shelved...
Including the works of Mr. Augustus Modicum.
Well, that's true.
Well, this is a novel of high society.
Oh, very well, let's take a look. Aristocrats behaving badly, what is this?
Perhaps if you just sample the first few pages.
Just a moment. What this can't be. What? We're set here. Surely not. Come back in an hour and I'll give you my verdict.
I paced the streets of London, and believe me, that was one of the longest hours of my life. But finally, I returned to Mr. Scavenger's office for the verdict. I feared the worst.
Pray be seated, Mr. Anonymous. I have now completed my perusal of your manuscript. The spelling is atrocious, the grammar is at times non-existent, the stiltedness of some of the dialogue beggars belief, the crude portraits of living nobility only just escape being criminally libelous, the plot, if I can call it that, creaks with the cumbersomeness of a badly oiled wagon wheel. What else can I say except that I'm willing to publish it?
You are?
If you give me 5 guineas, I'm willing to take on the onerous task of getting it into print.
Well, I don't think I want to do that.
Well, I suppose I could publish it for you at a somewhat lower price, say 2.5 guineas.
Nah, I'm sorry. I was expecting you to pay me.
You were?
Yeah. But I haven't put all this effort in to go away out of pocket. I know some literary gentlemen like to starve in garrets, but I am not one of them. If that's your last word, goodbye, Mr. Scavenger. At that moment, it seemed as if my dream was about to end in rejection. But as I started to open the office door to leave, I noticed a look in Mr. Scavenger's eyes.
Oh, no, no! Very, very well, I am prepared to pay you 1 guinea as some compensation for the time you've spent.
It was then I realised he really wanted it. 10 guineas.
10 guineas? For a first-time author?
It's not that I'm a first-time author that matters, is it? It's what I have to say.
You appeal to my sense of charity and love of literature. 2 guineas.
6 guineas.
5.
Done.
I'm a fool of myself, and I'll draw up a contract, and then...
Yeah, what about the second edition and subsequent editions?
What about them?
Well, don't I get more money if there's more than one edition?
What an extraordinary idea.
Right, well, if you don't want
to... No, wait, no. I'm sure we can come to some accommodation. 5 guineas more for a second edition, and...
And for a third and subsequent, 10 guineas.
Oh, very well. But we'll be lucky to sell 50 copies. Now, you wish, I gather, to remain anonymous?
Is that a difficulty?
Not at all. We shall say, written by a gentleman, or possibly written by one who knows. There remains, however, the question of the title.
What, you don't like aristocrats behaving badly?
They need some of the temps with promises of nobility linked to scandal. Ermines and evil, castles and crime, something like that. I have it! Nobility and scandal in one succinct phrase. The besmirched escutcheon.
The besmirched escutcheon? Is that a good title?
Remember, in the end, a good title is simply the title of any book which sells a great number of copies.
I returned home with my contract from Mr. Scavenger and awaited my literary debut. Having watched the improvident ways of the aristocracy, my 5 guineas I saved, apart from some flowers, to Mary Ann for her assistance. I told her I would have dedicated the book to her if I could, but that would be giving the game away. And then the day came.
Oh, Charles, is that them?
Yes, Mary Ann, these are the reviews, which I've managed to successfully secrete into the castle without being observed.
Oh, are they good?
Judge for yourself. Here is Blackwood's magazine.
The besmirched scutcheon is a truly remarkable production. Remarkably bad in many ways, but with a certain gruesome fascination when one considers the notable similarities between certain of the characters and certain well-known members of the aristocracy.
The Gentleman's Monthly?
I will spare my readers the details of the disgusting allegations which this novel contains, as I trust to their good taste not to want to know them. Oh, Charles, this is terrible. After all your hard work. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I don't think you need to be, Mary Ann. I think this means the book is going to be a success.
And indeed, though I do not wish to boast, my predictions were accurate. The first edition sold out within a week, and Mr. Scavenger had to produce a second and third editions and pay me accordingly, which I think grieved him, despite the money he was making. But there was one matter which still impended. What would happen when the book came to the attention of my master and mistress?
Ah! Whatever is the matter, William?
This damned book, The Besmirched Escutcheon. Now I know why all the fellows at the club were sniggering behind my back.
Look, I don't understand.
Damn it, Gwendolyn, you're supposed to be the reader.
I had the impression that this was not a novel which a genteel person should peruse.
You're right there, but unfortunately not everybody is genteel.
But I don't understand. What is this novel about?
Us, Gwendolyn! Us!
I fear you are right, William. What is Fuddlesex Towers, if not Diddlesex Castle?
And who is the Duke who always tells a story about giving a dog a bony if it is not me?
And though I reject the imputation, this Duchess of Fuddlesex, who seeks to deny her age, could be regarded as a portrait of me.
You haven't mentioned the way she eyes the young footman, just like you.
And I don't think you should mention it either, if you're a gentleman. And in return, I promise not to refer to what happens when you are in town and staying at your club.
They're saying our son is little short of an idiot.
And our daughter's a little short of trollops. William, this author should be horsewhipped.
His name is not given.
Then the publisher, Mr. Scavenger.
But there is a difficulty, Gwendolyn. If I horsewhip Mr. Scavenger, then that's as good as admitting the family in this book is our family. A fact we shall always strenuously deny.
It pains me to say it, William, but you are right. But the individual who has perpetrated this outrage must be uncovered and punished in some way. Because, I regret to admit this, it is clearly someone who knows us very, very well.
You can imagine my apprehension at hearing these words spoken by the Duchess. And indeed, a very thorough examination of who might be guilty took place. Lists of weekend guests were carefully scrutinised and questions asked. Finally, even the servants were summoned and interrogated. I realised that if my authorship was discovered, it would be the end of my dream of ever becoming head footman anywhere.
I intend to be, but why?
Because some of the other servants have been telling His Grace that they've seen you pen in hand, writing upon sheets of paper. His Grace doesn't consider that natural behaviour in a servant.
I'll tell him I've been writing letters to my ailing widowed mother.
But you don't have one?
Yeah, he won't know that. Will he?
What about all your trips to London?
I'll think of something.
Oh, Charles.
Look, I have to go. I can't keep His Grace waiting.
Oh, good luck!
Well, you can imagine the state of apprehension in which I entered the room. And there was the Duke, looking as grim as could be.
Come in, Charles.
Yes, Your Grace.
Now, Charles, this has been a lengthy investigation. But I think I now know who the ingrate is who is responsible for this novel.
Do you, Your Grace?
And there's no point in looking sheepish. You know, too.
Do I, Your Grace?
Come, come, don't play the fool with me. The answer is obvious.
Is it? I really don't know, Your Grace.
Shall I tell you, then?
If you please, Your Grace.
Mr. Modicum.
Mr. Modicum?
The novel is published by his publisher, after all. Charles, you attended him during his disgraceful collapse at the dinner table. You must conceal nothing. You must remove my final doubt. Did he say anything that would lead you to believe he is responsible for this ungentlemanly betrayal of my hospitality?
Now I think of it, he said he'd like to write a novel which showed the aristocracy up for what they really were.
Thank you, Charles!
And that was the end of Mr. Modicum's social career, I'm afraid. He published vicious attacks upon the aristocracy after that, but none had the success of the besmirched escutcheon. Maybe he should have just written what he wanted to write while he had the chance. As for me, I stacked my money away. But what happened next is, as we novelists say, another story.
The Yellow Plush Papers by William Makepeace Thackeray was adapted for radio by Stephen Wyatt. Charles Yellowplush was played by Adam Buxton. Mary Ann was Annabel Dowler, and the Duke was Paul Ryder. The Duchess was Janice Aqua, the Marquess Inar Mirza, Modicum Gunacorthry, and Scavenger Stephen Critchlow. The director was Abigail Le Fleming.